live. This is Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, Monday, June 21st, 2021, our working session, and I would call this meeting to order at 6:02. And first of all, roll call, please.
Dr. McIntyre?
Present.
Dr. Fumbelli?
Here.
Dr. Hines?
Present via Zoom.
Dr. Kreitcher?
Here. All right, could I have everybody stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Like the approval of the amended agenda, the amendments are 7.5 in the consent agenda, superintendent contract renewal, 7.9, approval of exception to policy GCQEB/GDQEB, and granting of 110 transition employment. And in action items 8.5, authorized superintendent signature on IGA with Town of Elizabeth for 2021-22 SRO program.
So moved.
Second.
All right, can I get the approval of the minutes for the board? Roll call, please.
Dr. McIntyre?
Yes.
Dr. Fumbelli?
Yes.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Kreitcher?
Aye. All right. Can I get the approval for the minutes from the Board of Education meeting on June 7th, 2021?
So moved.
Second.
All right, roll call, please.
Dr. McIntyre?
Yes.
Dr. Fumbelli?
Yes.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Kreitcher?
Aye. Okay, now we'll move to the communications part of the agenda. And first up is the Chief Financial Officer, Ron.
All right, so just want to talk to you a little bit about the fund balance resolution, appropriation resolution, interfund borrowing resolution, and the interest-free loan program resolution. So we'll start with the fund balance resolution, and this is all part of code, it's state statutes, and that based on the fact that we're balancing the general fund budget by using a portion of the beginning fund balance, that we need to pass a fund balance resolution stating that we are using a portion of the beginning fund balance. And this is a resolution basically making it transparent that to the school board and this, the community, that this is what we're doing. It's that we're using a portion of the fund balance. It's not going to cause a deficit, an ongoing deficit, but we're just using a portion of the fund balance to balance the budget. And that's what this is, and it's, we only have one fund this year, this is the general fund, that we are using a portion of the beginning fund balance to balance the budget. Any questions here? Next up is something a little bit new, and it's called the interfund borrowing resolution. Now, just to give you a little bit of background, not every fund has its own bank account. Self-insurance fund has its own bank account. When we had the bond redemption fund, it had its own bank account. But the general fund, the pupil activity fund, the grants fund, all use one fund to receive their revenues and also to make expenditures out of. And it's basically what's called pooled cash. And since we don't have separate checking account for each one, we can use whatever cash is available to pay ongoing obligations. But in the years past, we have always had enough cash on hand that if technically you would have borrowed money or needed to make an ongoing obligation and there wasn't technically enough cash in the fund, then you would need to have one of these resolutions saying that it's okay to do that. But since in the past we've always had enough money on hand to do that, This year is a little bit different for a couple of reasons, and that is, number one, we just got the MLO a couple of years ago, so we don't start getting the money from the MLO until later on in the fiscal year. March and April is when our property tax payments come in. And so that's one of the reasons why we borrow money from the state treasurer's office on an interest-free basis and to help make ongoing obligations. But it's the nature of the beast and how all school districts are funded that we don't get a large majority or large portion of our funding until property tax obligations start coming in. So that's why you borrow the money. But then also, on top of that, we have the ESSER money coming in, and because we have this ESSER money coming in, and we have to spend the money up front, and then we get reimbursed, it causes a little bit of a cash flow issue. And so we could be spending a couple hundred thousand dollars, and that would short us if we're doing this in January or February. I don't anticipate that happening, but I want to be on the safe side. And this allows us to basically to use some of the funds that are sitting in our checking account to pay ongoing obligations for the grants or for the pupil activity fund or things like that, without having to worry about showing that we didn't get permission. So that's why I brought this to you this year, to make sure that it's everybody knows what we're doing. There is no formal paperwork like the interest-free loan program from the state treasurers. There's no documentation like that. We don't have to set up a loan from the general fund to the pupil activity fund to pay coaches. It's just standard operating and normal operating procedures in the finance office. Let's see.
Hey, Ron, before you move off that, just for everybody's awareness, could you just ramble off a few of the expenditures in each of those four buckets, the 10, the 21, the 22, and 23?
Well, in the general fund, 80%, about 80% of the budget is salaries and benefits.
Okay.
And so that's the biggest portion of it. It's not single one-time expenditures upgrading our HVAC system. It's just your regular ongoing obligations on a monthly basis. And they don't change a whole lot from each month, but it does draw down quite a bit of cash. And since we have to draw down that bit of cash, we might need to tap into, say, you know, the interest-free loan, or maybe some funds that are in the Pupil Activity Fund or food service.
Sure.
So, and also another problem is, well, let's take food service. Food service, again, it's mostly salaries, but then also food purchases. And another issue is, because we are not charging for food service, you know, for meals, we rely on the federal government to pay us. And the federal government is always at least 1 month behind in reimbursing us for those lunches. And so that causes another problem, another hindrance for us. And we have regular just food costs. For people activity, we have coaches, and we also have fees that we have to pay referees and league fees and things like that. So those are just an example of some of the ongoing obligations that we want to make sure we always have enough cash on hand for to meet those needs.
That makes a lot of sense, especially when you look at the amounts that are designated here. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Okay. Who's that? Okay. And then the appropriation resolution. This is the resolution that basically states how much money we can spend up to in each one of those funds. And it's not only in the appropriation resolution, but it's also, I also have it listed separately on our cover memo that, I don't know if you were looking at it, but the cover memo is not in the book.
Oh.
But the appropriation resolution, if you can.
This one?
That's the one.
Yes.
Yeah.
There it is, right there.
Hey,
that's the appropriation resolution right there. And that just says, that's how much money we can spend up to. That's what you're authorizing us to spend up to for this upcoming fiscal year. In each one, in the aggregate for each one of those funds. Not the aggregate at the bottom, but the aggregate next to the line item itself. Let's see. Any questions regarding this?
I'd just like to add, especially for Kim as a newer member, that the that limit to give you an understanding of how the district plans to spend the money and where the revenue is going to come from to afford those expenditures, that's what the budget does, so that when you approve the resolution for spending up to a certain amount, you know what's the expected revenue and you know how the district is planning to spend it. And then once you've approved it, Ron gives you reports about how we're doing relative to the specifics of each school, but also the district as a whole, and that we're staying under that amount. Because literally, we as the administration can't spend a penny more than you've authorized. And so it's an important step that you guys take when you approve that. And then you get the report of the financial reports to show you how we're doing relative to meeting that target, that maximum spending amount.
So when I give you the financial reports on a monthly basis, you'll see specific line items that have budgets in them. And we try and benchmark that by trying to go 1/12 every month is what we're going to try and spend. But that's not what happens in the real world. Salaries come fairly close to that, but office supplies, purchase services, trainings and things like that, and especially office supplies, the schools spend a lot of that up front purchasing supplies for the upcoming school year. And so that's why that when I you know, benchmark it each month for each one of the funds, I'll also have line items that are benchmarked and how much is spent as a budget. But it's in the aggregate. I try and stay in the big picture looking at that, and that's why I try and give you the big picture. Because you'll see line items every now and then that will go over budget. But as I tell the staff at the schools, as long as you're not over the overall budget within your building code, then you're okay. If you overspend your budget, it's just a budget. It's a plan. Sometimes there are unexpected purchases that you have to make, and you have to make them. You can't shut down your school because you don't have enough money in one line item. You still have to keep operating. And so I tell the schools, it's okay to spend them, but just try and keep an eye on your overall budget that way. So, and it's the same way. I don't bring that up to you every month. I bring you up to what the big picture is on a per fund basis. But you also have the opportunity to see the financial statements for each building to see what is going on in there. And if something looks really out of whack, you're always more than welcome to ask the question, what's going on here? And
sure.
More than likely, there's a reasonable explanation. And it's more or less, most of the time, it's an anomaly that happens. And so,
does each school put together a line item for like supply budget? So this, you know, we think we're going to have to spend X amount on copy paper, or you know, that kind of thing.
So each school, I meet with them, a couple of times a year, the office manager, principals, and we talk about the budgets, and but then also the office managers prepares a budget for each one of their schools that has nearly all of their line items for supplies and purchase services. They don't provide a line item for utilities or anything like that, but for supplies for 7th grade science at the middle school. they have these 20, 30, 40, 50 line items that they'll put their budget in. This is their requested budget with the actual full account code. They'll give it to me in a spreadsheet form, and then I don't, the only adjustments I make to that spreadsheet is formatting it so I can export it into our financial software. So I don't touch that whatsoever except making the columns certain width is basically what I do. And then I just enter it in there. The salaries and other benefits and things like that, then I make adjustments to those based on what has been spent year to date, usually through the end of May, and try and project what it's going to be next year based on the percentage increase that we're giving staff at that point in time.
Okay, makes sense. So?
And one of the things that, sorry, I was distracted by a text from Carol, I think is important, and you know, he may have mentioned it when you guys joined the board and not since, I don't know, but the question comes up from time to time about how does he build the budget in terms of last year's spending versus next year's spending. And I'll give the short answer, but Ron, if you could elaborate if you think it would be helpful, that let's say that a school has 50% of its supply budget remaining a month before the end, you know, in May. They know that Ron won't decrease their supply budget for the next year because there's 50% remaining. That he will, unless there's a reason, continue with a variation of what was originally budgeted in order to not encourage end-of-year spending to keep the budget line item, to maintain it at its level. So folks know that they don't, you know, if they can save money, that's great. They aren't going to then decrease the amount that they're going to have available for the next year, and therefore try to have a bunch of kind of fiscal year end spending.
Right.
And that's an important budgeting approach that Ron takes.
Right. And I think probably some of you might have heard the term year-end dumping. And that's the federal government has done that. I don't know, I haven't heard the term recently, but some people in the federal government, well, some departments within the federal government, will spend nearly all of their budget if they haven't spent it. If they spent 50%, like Douglas is using an example there, with 1 month left in the year, they're gonna start spending it. And they're, because if they don't spend it, they'll lose it. And so it's called a use or lose budget. And so they don't want to lose it, and so then they use it on things that they might not necessarily need for that fiscal year. And so instead of having that built-in waste mechanism, I try to encourage, you know what, only spend what you need to spend. And you're not gonna lose the budget. You're not gonna lose that amount for that line item or for your school just because you're 50% under budget with a month left in the school year. So
I don't think our schools need $2,500 toilets.
No, no, that's right.
That was a couple administrations ago.
Right. Yeah, but it really does encourage prudence then on the part of the staff.
Yeah.
They're very conscientious about only spending what they need to, saving money where they can, and you know, they're not punished for that by seeing a smaller budget for the next cycle.
Okay. Yeah. Good point,
Douglas. Ron, one question on the appropriation resolution. If you could just help remind me, when I'm doing the math and I look at the legacy charter school component unit line item versus the overall appropriation, I'm coming up with 17.8% going to legacy. Is that in the ballpark of percentage? For some reason, I thought it was less, but I...
So you're looking at it as a component of the total appropriation, which also includes all of these other funds, including the self-insurance.
Correct.
And the grant fund and that. And if you took all of those components out of there and use it as a percentage of the general fund, mm-hmm. you're going to see that's going to be significantly over 20%. What they're doing is also they're appropriating their reserves. We mm-hmm. don't appropriate the reserves.
Okay. Okay.
That's a decision that they make.
Got it.
And you don't need to. And so one of the reasons why we don't appropriate reserves is because what happens is when the auditors are building the audit and they're showing your expenditures as a percentage of your overall appropriation, it looks like you're way under budget. And that used to be a bugaboo of administrations years ago.
Okay.
And so that's why I don't want to overstate what our appropriation is by also appropriating reserves.
Got it.
And so that's why I don't do that. And so.
Okay. No, helpful. Thank you.
Good question. Okay, but a significant portion.
Oh yes.
Of the budget.
I just couldn't remember the exact percentage, like a traditional percentage. If it was 20%, 10%, 17.8 seemed a little high, but.
As a percentage of the MLO, they get 19, a little bit over 19. Yeah.
That's what it was. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it
so
falls
it's even
in
a little line. Higher because. The number you calculated off
yeah.
includes some other funds.
Correct. Correct.
So it's even a little bit higher than
yep.
17. But
you're right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Sure. Cool. Interest-free loan. We've talked about this in years past. Again, the nature of how we're funded, we have cash flow needs. We know we're going to be flush at the end of the year, but until we are flush with the property tax receipts, there's some cash flow issues. And so that's why we sometimes need to borrow the money to make sure we can pay everybody and meet all of our ongoing obligations. And this allows us to do that. And it doesn't cost us a dime except putting all the paperwork together and sitting here and chatting about it and explaining it. And there is an expense in terms of labor because we have to put together this massive cash flow statement that we send to the state and just so we can get permission to do all this. But it's necessary evil for school districts to sometimes have to borrow. And considering that I know in the past, Boulder's, I think, requested over the years probably 100, I think 100, 1.120 million in terms of borrowing. DPS, Denver Public Schools is pretty close to it too, I believe. So.
And we've had to use it more since the mill levy override passed, because that's additional revenue that we use for ongoing expenses all year long that we don't get until the tax collections. Mm-hmm. So there's even more that we get, which is probably why Boulder has to use it, because they get a lot from local as well. So we're paying those expenses out. November, December, January, February, we're not receiving any revenue for them until and so that's why we have needed it almost every year since we passed the levy override.
Right.
When do we get the real estate taxes?
We start getting the bigger chunks in. We get a little bit of money nearly every month, but the big chunks come in March and May and June. So.
Do they trickle in after that as well, just little bits, or is that?
Oh yeah, it trickles in after that, but we're talking maybe $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, so in late sure. tax payments. Let's see. Last item, it's not related to the budget, but just wanted to give you a heads up. We talked about it at the last meeting about removing the contents at Frontier High School. And I do have a action item on here, or a consent agenda item on here, for the disposition of district property within Frontier High School. And so we're going to be, once we get your approval, we're going to be dispersing it. To the general public. We'll advertise it, we'll set up a couple of days and just ask for a donation in kind. Not in kind, but donation for
a kind donation.
What's that?
A kind donation.
A kind donation, yeah. Not in kind, a kind donation. Thanks for the catch.
All right. Anything else, Ron?
I can't think of anything. No.
Yeah, just, I don't know if this is a more appropriate place, but I'd just like to recognize Ron and his team for a really great job in a very tough year. We started out the year with a lot of uncertainty on a number of dimensions, including finance. And, the good news was that the federal government, had three grants that they provided school districts, which really helped ease some of the financial pressure and the additional spending from the pandemic. But it also created a lot of burden and a lot of reporting and a lot of reporting into the future. But the ability for the district to add to the salary schedules and the compensation schedules for our certified and classified staff to the extent that we were able to, and to go into this next year with this strong budget, it doesn't happen by accident or automatically. And we're really fortunate that Ron continues to work hard on behalf of the district and the community, and I think we all benefit from it. So I just wanted to publicly thank you.
Thank you. I second that.
Yes.
Thank you. I got to tell you, I know when I started working in government, I've seen bureaucracy, but this year it's bureaucracy on steroids with all of the reporting requirements, all the information that's needed that we have to fill out for all the applications and all the paperwork and headaches there and all the training. I have never sat through so many trainings. I think in this year alone, more than all the other trainings I've sat through in the last 16 years. There, I have a regular standing training on Thursday afternoons at 1 o'clock with CDE for something called office hours. And it's about basically how to fill out all the paperwork that you need to get this money, and then also what items can you spend it on. And then there also have to have these plans in place for safe return to schools and how to address lost learning and things like that, and all the items that are associated with lost learning, of which I'm learning, unfortunately, a bit more than I ever anticipated. So, thank you for those kind words.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Ron, before we let you go, one quick question. You mentioned disposition of district property, Frontier High School. So I went into our consent agenda folder, but it looks like, did you have a line itemed sheet that was to have gone into the consent? Okay.
I did not.
So this looks like the one Marty had last time. Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because this is all computers and cables and fancy stuff.
There's so much stuff there. I gave you a ballpark idea of what it is.
Yep. So. No, I didn't even want it. I just wanted to make sure if it was supposed to have been included, it was in there, and maybe a file got mixed. But, okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Ron.
Hey, you're welcome to go inspect the goods.
I'd like to.
Yeah.
For a kind
field trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the school is more than three-quarters vacant. Some of the rooms are completely vacant. They've been moving a lot of files out, some to the high school.
Yeah.
Ron and I bumped into each other the other day. School board records, finance records. There's, old trophies and pictures of kids that were, kids that had passed away. Mm. Accomplishments.
Wow.
Some that, old record books of students, teacher grade books from the 30s and 40s.
Oh my gosh.
But most of it is, you probably would walk out empty-handed.
Yeah.
Maybe you would. That's why you didn't want to list everything, because there's a lot of random stuff.
No, that makes sense.
A lot. It would be very labor-intensive jotting everything down. As I, to give you an example of one of the items that somebody had an interest in, I got a phone call, I don't know, a month or two ago, from a lady, I don't know, she lives in the community, but her grandfather was on a former school board, and her grandfather's name was on a plaque, and she wanted to know if she could have the plaque, and so I was like,
sure. Oh, that's great.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
That's really great.
Yeah.
That's neat.
It would be neat to have all that from the 30s and 40s, and I think that's
like a display.
Like, yeah.
Well, we do have one at the high school. Mm-hmm. It has a selection of historical things, and I think somebody's going to look to see if there was anything worth donating to the county historical society.
Oh, good.
Oh, nice.
But most of it's more in that realm of not really historical, just old.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
All right. We'll move on to the superintendent update.
Last Thursday, we were fortunate to host the first in-person meeting of the Commissioner's Rural Advisory Council, or no, Rural Education Council. So the Commissioner of Education, Department of Education, has, and it was written into statute and it's funded by statute, a Rural Advisory Council to highlight rural issues for the Commissioner of Education and for the whole Department of Education. I'm talking about the Colorado Department of Education. And that council meets four times a year. Two or three times a year they will meet at school districts, member school districts. So the positions are appointed by the commissioner. I'm one of the members. It has the other organizations, membership organizations on it as well. But this was their first in-person meeting in over a year, and for many of the CD staff, one of their first in-person meetings in a long time, because CDE has been working remotely through the pandemic. So it was kind of curious to see, they meaning the CDE senior staff, so it was the commissioner, a lot of the assistant commissioners, were so glad to see people in person. Brett was there, he gave a quick little update on HTI to them. It was interesting because Brett and John Everhart, it's like they were done with seeing people, because every day they've seen somewhere between 650 and 700 people every day for the last year. So they were kind of, and I think that's kind of emblematic of what's happened throughout the state. You know, there's very different experiences based on communities and school districts and organizations and how they've approached the pandemic. So. There were superintendents there, board members, the head of CASE, the head of CASB, the head of the Rural Alliance, the head of the BOCES Association, the director of the Rural Institute at UNC, plus, so there were, I think, close to 30 people there, and it was more or less an all-day meeting, and it went really well. There's 30 minutes at the beginning of every one of these. It's kind of a local overview, and it's been a great way for members of the council as well as the commissioner to learn about what's going on in rural schools. And it's been one of the most memorable times for me, kind of, in not just of the meetings in general, learning about some of the really innovative and pretty incredible things that are going on in rural schools across Colorado. There's just a lot of innovation. There's a lot of creative thinking, a lot of initiative, and very kind of targeted programs based on, you know, based on the region and what's available. So for that reason, in part, we talked a little bit about the Homegrown Talent Initiative. But I also just took pictures and videos from my phone that I took over the course of the year. First day of school, some videos, some pictures. The concerts, the choir, the band concert that we had 6 weeks into school. Pictures of students taking their final exams in the gym that were quarantined and all spread out so that we could, students moving desks and chairs from the classrooms to the gym to take state testing and then back, because it was such an operation to do that. Graduation, middle school, continuation, field day, and just kind of walk through the year. because I thought that for people at CDE who haven't been out of their homes, I mean, not by and large, but certainly not been into schools, to see one example of a school year and to see it visually and to kind of get a feel for it. And the commissioner was very appreciative for it, and I think it made an impression of at least one district, but I think it was representative of other districts that have been in person throughout the year. And it was just pictures in kind of in sequence, and then I talked it through. And I can tell you, when I was putting it together, there were times where I got choked up seeing like what our teachers and kids did.
Yeah.
And remembering the challenges that people faced and so forth. And educators are kind of that way. I mean, we get all, you know, emotional about sometimes sentimental things, but it really was, for me personally, moving to just kind of go back and remember, you know, where we started and then how things progressed through the year. And I started it, I want to tell you this, I didn't think ahead here. Maybe I'll show it to you later, but I started with a slide, and some of you may, a picture, some of you may be familiar with it. When you're going out to Spring Valley Golf Club, there's a ranch to the right,
mm-hmm.
and it has a sign.
Yeah, this is a ranch.
You've seen this sign.
Yeah.
Okay, I took a picture of that sign a number of years ago when it was newer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The last time I saw it, it was a little
raggedy.
But it was back when it was nice. And I said, you know, welcome to Elizabeth and rural Colorado. And you'll see. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
It's just kind of a warning to people who are coming out to the Elizabeth area from a more suburban or urban setting. And buying, especially in a subdivision, looks kind of like what they're used to, like Spring Valley or whatever. I mean, that's what they're looking at. So this is a ranch next to Spring Valley, where it's a working farm. And there's like all the things that happen on that farm. And it's like, if you're not ready for this, then don't buy a home next to a farm, is what the sign says. And just to illustrate, you know, this is a challenge for communities that are kind of at that, on that border. And maybe even now, with people really wanting to kind of be in a less populated area, less densely populated area, of what it's really like to live in rural Colorado. Dirt roads, washboard roads, dust, animals, etc. And so they appreciated that, but that kind of was to say, you know, it didn't take you too long to get here.
Right.
But it really is rural.
It's different. Yeah.
And they were very, another thing that was interesting, they were very impressed with the high school. And they were surprised that it was 20 years old. And I said, we've taken good care of it. And nicely, for those of you, you've probably all seen it, the stairs from the second.
Yeah.
They were replaced.
Oh, nice.
So
they looked really good.
And there was no coordination whatsoever. I didn't even know this was happening until you came up to me 2 days before and said what was going on. But we had planned, as you know, the stair treads, for this upcoming fiscal year. And I told Lloyd, I said, you know what? If we don't want to spend another year with these. So if they can get them in June, go ahead and get them in June. And they did. And
yeah,
they looked great.
It was nice because it was just one of those. And they put in like about half of the new cement at the front of the school.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things, left hand knowing what the right hand is doing. They were in the midst of that project, and when I realized they were in the midst of this cement project, I said, okay, you got to wait to do the rest of it until after Thursday, please. And so they did, and we made a good impression. So it was nice for a lot of these people that have heard of Elizabeth, know us, but haven't been out here, to see a different kind of rural, because I think often they think of rural as always being small and maybe sometimes like old buildings. And we certainly have, you know, our old buildings, I would say Running Creek and the middle school. But to realize that it doesn't have to be small, and we look very much like a medium-sized suburban school district in terms of the school itself. So
I would like
most
to
of our, I'm sorry.
No, go
most
ahead.
Of our, the parents of our kids work in the tech center. They work in Denver, downtown Denver. And so it's their getaway, you know, and it is interesting to see that picture, that, you know, that sign of the farm, and then see all the houses that are built up now around the golf course. And, you know, and it's people that want to move out, get out of the, you know.
Wouldn't know that you would.
But we're just, you know, I work in Denver. I work, you know, that's my day job, and it's great.
Yeah.
We didn't have all that, though, when we moved out here.
Yeah, and I've been, I was talking to Shelley, who's been here quite a while, and just knowing that there was a time when 13, County Road 13, was a dirt road.
Yep.
And the road hilltop that connects to, was it 158 or something? It's 150.
Yeah, right.
It connects to Hilltop. Yep. Used to be dirt coming off of Hilltop.
Oh, Flintwood too. Yeah.
And because I hear stories when the district had Mondays, and I kind of, because I have to make those decisions about when we delay or close, and I just have never. I mean, we have some issues with mud, but I never think, oh, we've got to, you know, have a Monday. Well, the reason that we had Mondays is because a lot of the roads that we now know as asphalt roads used to be dirt roads, and they were some of the major arteries that we wouldn't think today as, you know, it's hard to imagine County Road 13 as a dirt road, right? It just, so anyway, it was nice to be able to host that meeting and do all that.
Douglas, if you ever want a term, one of my daughter's friends came from the Springs and came up here. She calls it bougie rural. She's like, bougie rural. So it's like you're on the edge of being in a big city, but you're still rural. It's not the true rural that you would expect. Bougie. Bougie rural. I was like, okay, I don't know how to spell that. That's a kid term. I'll ask my daughter and I'll text it to you later.
Okay. Is bougie supposed to be short for bourgeois?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oh. That's exactly what it is.
I kind of like, there's another term that's kind of this combination of rural and suburban or something, this kind of suburban or something.
Suburban.
Silly. Now I'm hungry. It's like, well, let's just, you know, pick. You're suburban or you're rural. We can be rural on the edge of suburban, so let's keep it easy and simple.
Yeah.
I can't remember, and I didn't have time to look it up, but did I mention the work that our schools were doing on the graduate profile at the last meeting?
Yes.
So that's continued with Running Creek, and there was a lot of excitement about the possibilities for students in that work and the plans that were being developed. So those teams are going to continue to meet in the fall and through the school year to look at how they're providing opportunities for all the students to develop competency in each of those 7 graduate profile areas. And as hopefully in August we can update you on all the kind of the new things for the new school year related to the Homegrown Talent Initiative, where we have the new schedule, we'll have more college concurrent classes, the industry certificate classes, internships, and then work on the graduate profile, and then something called ground school at the high school that prepares kids with self-assessments and interest surveys and looking at how they would plan their courses for high school with more options available in addition to more classes. I don't know what the number is. I think we offered maybe something like 19 new classes, but not all of them are going to end up being offered for because there weren't enough interest or scheduling didn't work right. In addition to the continuing of the alternative program, after the closure of Frontier, that program is going to continue to exist, continue to evolve, you know, taking lessons from this year about how to best support students, which students be in the program, which, you know, how to adjust their course schedules. So I think that's worked out well in general. But I think we'll always be challenged with how do we meet the needs of every student. And that program is designed for those that probably most struggle with just the fit in terms of learning style and the structure. But hopefully with some of the opportunities of homegrown talent and then some of the classes that are designed to teach more towards their learning style, that we'll be able to meet many of those needs. So that was, I would say, very successful, and thanks to Adam and Lori, who were the two teachers that taught social studies and English as a part of that. The last thing is just, I mentioned this at the last meeting, but next school year.
John's getting on.
Oh, okay. So John Gutenberg's joining remotely here in a moment. Okay.
Kristen, did you get that? John Gutenberg is, okay, good, joining us remotely.
So there's been interest, I know, moderate interest by parents about what's school going to look like next year. Probably, again, moderate interest by staff. It really depends on the person, what's going to look like. There's really been, by some, an interest to have very specific information, but more broadly, people, I think, were satisfied enough with this year to say, I'm willing to wait, and I understand that you can't commit to the details until later. And we can't. So the approach that we will take is to have the least number of restrictions necessary to keep everybody safely in person with the least amount of disruption overall, and in particular, like, for example, with quarantining protocols, which for us is what we use to determine who gets excluded from in-person learning for short periods of time because of health, with the hopeful approach of if you're sick, you stay at home, and if you're well, you come to school. But to go much further than that at this point would be risky because we just don't know what the health guidance is going to be at that time and the mandates. We will treat guidance differently than mandates. So if it's an executive order, we will have to follow that, understand it, and follow it. If it's guidance, we'll have to see what guidance really makes things safer for us to follow the educational model that we're delivering, which is fully in person. I'm hopeful to be able to get out a short message to parents tomorrow just saying, this was your last meeting of the school year. You'll be meeting again sometime around August 12th, I don't know the date. And, you know, at the start of August, towards mid-August, we will be able to communicate more. But just to reassure you all and anybody that's listening or reading the notes that we do not have any intention to require vaccinations for students or staff or to ask students or staff their vaccination status. And the only way that would change is if it were an executive order and it had the force of law, and then we would have to determine how we would comply with that law.
Yeah.
But we don't, you know, we think that we've been able to keep our students and staff safe without even coming close to something like that. The focus will be more on air quality because we won't have masks. That's our hope, and therefore monitoring that. And we showed the state what we did with that. We had the mobile air purifiers and the CO2 monitors, and I was able to show them the CO2 level, and we were able to monitor it through, so that there wasn't a misunderstanding that rural schools are just blowing off the expectations. It's just that we work really hard with the restrictions that we've had. So,
and we have fresher air.
There you go.
To kind of pile on end of year, for those of you that are interested, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday is the state track meet. And of the 35 athletes on the team, I believe 17 are participating in the state meet this year.
Wow.
If you look at it as a percentage to the whole, it's the highest percentage of the team that's ever gone to state. So I'm happy to forward this schedule to anybody that would like to go.
Would you?
Yeah.
What events are they are they representative?
The women's sprint medley relay, the 4x1, the 4x2, the 4x4, the 4x8, women's 300 meter hurdles. We have a gentleman in the 400 meters, and we have a lady in the high jump.
Wow. What a year.
So.
And the high school hosted a meet. What was it, 2 weeks ago?
Two meets.
So I was. You can comment on the
one. You were at the one 3 weeks ago.
There were 21 or 22 school districts there.
School,
so maybe I reported on that at the last meeting.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, it was Eagle County, it was Burlington. I mean, it was like,
all
you know, a kind of mini United Nations of Colorado, because there was urban schools, suburban schools, rural schools. There were large ones. I think Denver had a little contingent here. I saw a bus from Denver.
Durango came.
Durango. And it was quite a kind of scene, because there were just all these different mascots and tents and kids. It kind of, if any of you have seen the Chariots of Fire about the Olympics and the runners from UK, and before they're all warming up and there's like all this activity, and just it was constant activity, and really there were some amazing athletes there. You kind of see some of the standouts that in their sports. So it's exciting. So
yeah, we charge gate fees at both meets. Yeah.
Nice.
Just
I know.
Where did it go?
Pick yourself up off the floor.
Yeah, I'm shocked because John told me months ago, no more. We're not going to do it the rest of the year. And okay, great. So
we talked about that for 4 years at track meets, charging gate fees, and they finally did.
Nice. So.
And Chaz is the new track coach, so it was his first big opportunity to organize something, and he did a great job.
He did a really good
coach.
Job.
So it's great.
Where's the meet at?
Jeffco Stadium.
Oh, Jeffco. Sixth Gipling?
Yes. Okay. So it's a hike, and there is a fee unless you have a Chaz pass. If you don't have a chance of passion, you probably grab one.
It's a great, you know, if you have any interest in track, it's a great event. It's really, it's amazing to see what kids can do.
Especially when there's so many activities going on at one time.
Yeah.
You just see the best of the state.
It's awesome.
How hard they work.
There's one young man who is running the fastest 800 time in the country right now. I think it's a 1:47 for a half mile.
And where is he from?
147.
Holy
smokes. I can't
remember.
Wow.
That is smoking.
So, anyway, sorry.
What race did you run?
The 4.8 and the 15. Don't ask me my time after I just read that stat off.
That's cool.
So, Paul, appreciates that.
A little passionate.
Yeah, I guess.
Somebody once ran the weightman's relay and also threw shot put and discus years ago at Jeffco. Back in the 70s.
That's great.
So.
That's great. I had no idea.
No, I didn't either.
You did?
Yeah. I don't know if they still even have it. It's more like a gimmick race, the weight man's relay. Heavy set high school kids, you know, running a 4x100 relay.
They still do it.
Do they?
Not at state, but it's a fun one, that and the coaches relay.
So it's not quite like powder puff, but the same general idea?
There's nothing at stake. It's more fun.
I don't know. I'd put some of those Waveman relays up against any regular 4x100. Some of those guys are quick.
Anyway, I'm done. Unless you have any questions.
All right. Any questions for
you? Thanks. I really appreciate the board support, the staff's collaboration. You know, said it before, but it was really a very, very successful year for us. It was a tough year, but everybody rose to the occasion individually and together, and I think it's something that we can not only be proud of today, but in the years to come.
It
got tough. Elizabeth's whole staff rose to the occasion, and so did the parents, and so did the students, because it really took, you know, that partnership among everybody. And I really think that going into next year, there's a lot less kind of recovery that everybody talking about recovery or, restarting school and all those. And those are not things that we're looking at. And I think looking at really leveraging the successes from this year and starting off next year really strong. Yeah, so thanks for
of your support. Just with what you've done and Ron and the whole staff and everybody just makes me proud to, this year has just been phenomenal for me and honored to be part of the school board. So,
parents,
everybody,
the whole community.
It's like you listen to all the stuff, the noise out kind of outside, and just really happy to be here. Yeah, cool. All right. Any questions for Douglas? Hi, John.
Hello, John.
No? All right. Well, let's move on to the consent agenda. And we're going to go through each one of them to get motion on each one of them. So we'll start with 7.1. This is the new hires and rehires? No, mm-hmm. not.
No.
Just.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Ask for a motion to approve the items.
7.0. 7.0 through 7.9. Motion to approve all of the consent agenda items.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? No? Roll call, please.
Dr. McIntosh?
Yes.
Dr. Fontelli?
Yes.
Dr. Gutenberg?
I really
want
to.
Aye.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Carter?
Aye. Okay, now we're going to move on to the action items, which I will go through each one of them and ask for a motion to approve. 8.1, State Treasurer's Interest-Free Loan Resolution.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? No? All right, thank you. Roll call, please.
Dr. McIntosh?
Yes.
Dr. Frumfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Gutenberg? Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye. All right. Moving on to 8.2, beginning fund balanced resolution full year 2021 to 2022.
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? No. All right. Roll call, please.
Director Beckender?
Yes.
Dr. Frumfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Guttenberg?
Aye.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Carter?
Aye. All right. 8.3, appropriation resolution for the full year 2021-2022 budget.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Dr. Beckender?
Yes.
Dr. Frumfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Gutenberg?
Aye.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Karcher?
Aye. All right. 8.4.
Fiscal.
Fiscal year, not final year, or full year.
Oh, did I? Oh, okay. Fiscal year. Okay. Thank you, Ron. All right. 8.4, interfund borrowing resolution fiscal year 2021-2022.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Dr. McIntosh?
Yes.
Dr. Frumfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Gutenberg?
Aye.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Carter?
Aye. All right. 8.5, authorized superintendent signature on IGA with Town of Elizabeth for 2021-2022 SRO program.
So moved.
Second. John can take it.
Okay. John, that's yours. Okay. Any discussion?
Yes. I'd just like to say that this is the result of months of very good discussions with the town about the SRO program for the next school year, primarily the town manager and the chief of police, along with Shane Pines, our director of safety, and then also initially our board president, Carol Hines, is also involved. And we're very encouraged by the commitment of especially EPD, Elizabeth Police Department, towards the SRO program and their ideas for the program for the future. And Shane has been taking the lead for the district on the program and will continue to do that. And so he's on the line now to just talk a little bit about both his impressions and what he's seen from the Elizabeth Police Department that's encouraging and we wanted you to know about, and then to be available if you had any questions.
Shane, you have until Shane, you have until 7 o'clock. I'm just saying.
It's only 1 minute past.
Oh well.
Well, my impression is that there would actually be questions first, and I'd be happy to answer them. Generally speaking, Chief Burgum has expressed a true enthusiasm and interest in making his partnership, his relationship, and the department's relationship with the school successful. We've had a lot more dialogue to that effect, a lot of unpacking of past situations, of current situations, and where we want to go in order to make sure that we're all headed towards the same direction, accomplishing the same goals, and supporting each other along the way. So from him, again, a great deal of enthusiasm and interest in terms of how he foresees the SRO program, and he's bouncing ideas off of us, and a great deal of dialogue with regards to that, as well as EPD supporting us on one of our grants and being able to successfully get that going and get it activated. So
one of the features of the agreement is that the town would not be limited to just providing the district with one SRO. So it's a small change, like on paper, one or more officers. And right now they don't seem inclined to have more than one officer.
Okay.
But we wanted to make sure that if they needed to, because you know, with the town and county and law enforcement, staffing's been a challenge. And so what we wanted to do was let them know that if they need the flexibility, say of having one officer for the middle school and one for the high school, a different one, that's okay. And so if over the course of the year things need to change to have a different officer, we're okay with that. That we don't want to box them into just one officer.
That's great.
Right now they don't intend to have more than one, but that is an important change going forward that we think, you know, for us, it's not an issue, and it could be really helpful for them. And
just from a staffing perspective.
Right.
Yeah,
because
a lot
we
of
know
flexibility.
That's an issue.
Yeah.
And to
further clarify Douglas's point, so EPD is investing in all their officers. My understanding is they have a majority of them trained through SRO training.
Oh, great.
So while they may not all necessarily be designated our school resource officer, they have training so that they have a common understanding amongst each other about what's going on within the schools and what the SRO is expected to do. While they will dedicate, as Douglas was alluding to, one officer, is their intention towards us to be able to develop those relationships and make sure that communication is consistent.
That's great.
And there was another change in the IGA intergovernmental agreement with relation to the payment by the district to the town. And rather than tying the payment to an individual's salary and compensation of having it be a fee that's the equivalent of paying for 100% of the service, so not 50% or 75% of the service, but 100% of the service, based on an average of the Elizabeth Police Department officer's salary.
Okay.
So it would be based off of an average salary rather than directly tied to an
individual.
And we think that that would give us both, on both sides, a little bit more flexibility so that it's not a matter of kind of having to always true up to a particular person's salary. And so that's, we're still waiting on that number. That's why the version that you have doesn't have a number in it. I believe that the town is set to act on this in their July meeting. They do have a meeting tomorrow, but their interim town manager, Brian McGroom, said that he believes that they're on track to approve it. So it has the support of the town administrator and the chief of police, as well as our support. It's been reviewed by their lawyers and ours, and we're waiting for their final review of some minor edits from our lawyer. You know, it's kind of like, when did the lawyers stop passing it back and forth? But and then the final resolution of the fee amount. So
that's great.
We think that also is just a better approach than the particular officer's salary, which sometimes gets adjusted in the middle of the year and that sort of thing. Anything else, Shane?
Nothing on my part, Mr. Is there any questions?
Any other questions?
No question, just a comment. Shane, Carol, thank you both on Zoom for all the work you've done, and Douglas for the work that you've done as well. I know it's been time-consuming and not unexpected, but time-consuming, but you guys are all doing a great thing and continuing the relationship with the EPD.
Thank you.
All right. No more questions, then roll call, please.
Dr. McIndoe?
Yes.
Director Funkfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye. All right. Any discussion items at all? No? I don't think we have any. All right. Moving on to Board of Education planning, our next board meeting is on August 9th, 2021. We're not moving into an executive session, so I adjourn this meeting at 7:08.